Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks for joining us. Once again, we are joined by Dr. Mark Dotzer. He is the chief economist and director of research for the Real Estate Center at Texas A&M University and in College Station, Texas. Thank you again for joining us, Dr. Dotzer.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Bruce.
Last time we talked about residential real estate, like to shift a little bit to commercial real estate. Has commercial real estate enjoyed a similar price boom as the residential side?
Yes, commercial real estate properties have skyrocketed to record highs along with residential. I think a big part of that record increase in prices has been attributed to the fact that there's a new breed of investor out there that's anxiously wanting to buy commercial real estate, and those are pension funds and endowment associations.
Do you think that their expected returns will materialize, or have they done some assumptions that probably won't turn out to be true?
I think that's a little bit too broad. There's a lot of real smart people out there that know how to buy commercial real estate and get a good return on their money. But unfortunately, sometimes when you get too much smart money in the market, some of that becomes dumb money.
Okay.
And there's obviously been people that have bought in at too high of a price. The reason for that is because the same kind of silly mortgage underwriting that was going on in the residential side of the business has been going on in spades in the commercial real estate side as well. In fact, I'm expecting to see an increase, maybe a double or tripling in delinquency and foreclosures in commercial real estate loans in the next 2 years just because of that reason.
So were they generous with loan to values, less down payments, that type of thing?
All of it.
Okay.
Like, okay, we'll make you a loan here where the income from the commercial real estate building is inadequate to make the debt service at all. And so we'll loan you some extra money so you can draw down your reserve to make your payment to us. And so you've got to get rent increases of between 5% and 10% a year for the life of the loan.
Oh my.
And if you don't, you're not going to make your payments. And so there's been a lot of interesting underwriting. That's called the debt coverage ratio, where the debt coverage ratio is one or below. And so there's going to be a big scramble here in the commercial real estate markets in the next 2 years with these people that bought recently with these silly loans that are scrambling to get that 5% to 10% rent bump every year to keep from going underwater. So I think that's one reason you're going to see rental rates continue to rise in 2008, even though you might see occupancy and absorption decline pretty dramatically.
Interesting. I didn't know those two could exist at the same time. I thought if you had a lot of vacancies, the winner would be the cheapest price.
Well, they will ultimately. But for this year, if you're a building owner and you just bought a building and your whole life is threatened if you don't get 5 to 10% rent hikes every year for 3 or 4 years in a row, if you start out of the blocks and can't get that rent hike the very first year, you're not going to have much credibility with your lender after that. And so my guess is people will be striving and pressing for higher rent hikes, even if it means a little higher vacancy rate.
Okay. What changes are in store for the commercial buyer in 2008 and beyond that the predecessor buyer didn't have to cope with? So bigger down payments, higher interest rate?
Yeah, I think so. I think the cost of borrowing is going to go up, no doubt about that. It already has. May go up a little more, but I don't expect too much. But the other thing is, yeah, you're going to have a lot more equity involved now. You know, as little as maybe 2 years ago, if I wanted to go to Austin, Texas and build a high-rise condo tower, I could probably, if I had the right credit rating, I could probably borrow 95% or maybe even 98% of the whole deal to do a condo project.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'd be lucky to get any money at all, and if I did, even for a good deal, I'd probably have to have 30% of my own money in the deal. So what we're going to, in my opinion, this is over the longer term going to be an excellent situation for commercial real estate, because we were just getting in the early stages of heavy overbuilding in commercial real estate. By that, I'm talking about office and industrial and apartments. And just as about the time the juices were really getting flowing to start overbuilding commercial real estate, Wall Street pulled the rug out from the capital markets there. And so I think we shut the light off on new construction plans about the end of July. And so you're not going to see too much new construction entering the pipeline for the next year or so until these mortgage markets resolve themselves and these banks can actually sell these mortgage-backed securities again and get the market back open. So, in effect, what you've done is just shut off the supply of new construction of commercial real estate almost like 100% starting in last summer. And so, you know, when you look at 2 or 3 years from now, there's going to be a big void there where all of a sudden you've seen construction cranes all over America, and then you don't see hardly anything because of this disruption in the credit.
I read somewhere in Great Britain that commercial real estate has really taken a hit in the last 12 months, and some of it had to do with the losses that were attributed to the U.S. mortgage investments and the tighter lender standards. I'm sorry, for every other type of real estate over there. Was that an accurate statement that they're having changes?
I need to be honest with you, despite the fact that I've got a PhD, I don't know everything, and I learned that I shouldn't pretend that I do. I know a lot of my colleagues in academia do that, but I'm not going to pretend I don't really know what's going on in the London commercial real estate market right now.
No problem.
I will say this from the international side of things, however, is that the declining value of the dollar has made every asset in America look extremely attractive, including real estate. For everybody that lives in a country that has a euro denomination associated with it, everything in the United States is basically on sale for 30% off right now. And so you've got people that are flying over to New York and going downtown New York City to shop because it's so cheap there. And same thing with real estate. When you can buy good quality real estate in the United States for 30% off, it's pretty hard to pass up.
I know a lot of Canadians are definitely going into Palm Springs in California and buying properties for that very reason, because their dollar now is on par or greater.
Right.
Commercial real estate values are usually determined by that net income from the building, but also a cap rate, which is, can you describe what a cap rate is, and is it likely to change because of a risk that may be now associated with commercial real estate?
To describe a cap rate in about a second and a half for a radio audience, a cap rate is almost like a dividend on a stock. It's a cash return that you get based on the cash that you paid for the stock. Pretty simple as that.
Okay.
And so what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years is that the capitalization rate, the cap rate, or the dividend rate, if you will, has just been bid down to extraordinarily unprecedented, basically unheard of low levels. I mean, apartment buildings in Phoenix, I'd become aware of that, had sold at a cap rate below 4%. I mean, it's just about the same as a treasury bond or even less. But so what's happened is, again, when you get cheap money and you get silly mortgage underwriting standards, you get people that will buy properties for any price, hoping they can turn around and flip it to somebody else for an even higher price. And a lot of the professionals in the business describe the commercial real estate market in the last year or two as a hot potato market, something you don't want to hold on to very long. Just keep playing in the marketplace. Just don't be the last guy holding the potato when the music stops.
Okay.
And so the music has stopped. And by that, I mean the silly mortgage underwriting lending was stopped basically the same day that the silly mortgage underwriting in the residential market stopped, about the third week of July. And so once the music stops, you're going back to normal again. And when you've paid prices based on super normal lending, going back to normal looks pretty ugly. And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to see slightly higher cost of money, going to see people needing to have more equity involved in their purchases, and that's just normal. But compared to where we've been in the last 2 years, it just looks like something horrible.
What would be a normal cap rate if you could get a 4% on a T-bill investment? What return would induce you to make an investment where you have to cope with a renter?
Well, you see, that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. I see that in a lot of financial media. Everybody just talks about how the cap rate is only 3%, as if that's the total return. But what you have to understand, like if you're thinking about a dividend on a stock, let's say you get a 3% dividend, that in effect is kind of like the cap rate on real estate. But when you own a stock, not only do you get that dividend, but there's a possibility that the price of stock will go up as well. So you might get a 3% dividend and have 5% appreciation for a total return of 8% on your stock. That's the same thing in the real estate markets. When somebody buys an apartment with a 3% cap rate, they're basically getting 3% cash return, but they're also banking on getting 5 or 10% price appreciation on top of that. So the total return might be more like 9 or 10%.
But if the next buyer looks at that and says, well, I'm not excited about that 3% cap rate, I'm going to want a 6, didn't that just devalue the asset by 50%?
Yeah, that's what happens. Is what if people perceive that the prices of commercial real estate are going to flatten out, then the cap rate becomes the total return.
Okay.
Because if you get a 3% cap rate with no appreciation at all, you have a total return of 3. And when that happens, then people say, you know what, I'm not buying something with a total return of 3. And if prices aren't going to go up, I got to have a 5 or 6% cap rate or even more, because that's my only return.
Correct.
Yeah. And we might see a little of that. Obviously, cap rates have started to go up a little bit, meaning that prices have gotten a little softer, but not a whole lot. And I frankly don't expect to see prices of quality commercial real estate drop too much, because, let's face it, in an inflationary environment, there's not that much that you can own that can protect its value from a government with an uncontrolled printing press.
Mm-hmm.
And so that means gold, commodities, real estate. And so I think people will be buying real estate not only for cap rate returns, not only for total returns, but also as a protection mechanism against the loss of the value, purchasing power of their assets as they think about retiring.
Just to get off a little bit on a subject that's local to you, Texas real estate values really confuse California investors. We look at structures that cost here $300 a square foot, and your new builders are building them and selling them for $90 a foot. We wonder if bricks are free in Texas. I mean, they're just an amazing price difference. And the Texas real estate market really has not inflated very much at all in this last cycle.
Yep.
That makes it a lot healthier going forward. And the last time oil did its thing, Texas was one of the main beneficiaries for at least a time. Is that in its future? Do you think Texas has some chance to be in one of the few states that might inflate in residential real estate in the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, yeah, I think the short answer is yes, I do. Number one, our prices haven't gone up all that much over the last decade. So I've spent the last 3 or 4 years talking to the media about how there is no price bubble in the state of Texas in residential real estate. And so, yeah, our prices haven't gone up all that much. We do have to pay for bricks, but the fact is our land is just a lot cheaper. In fact, you know, if your prices have gone up in California and you've made a fortune just by living in a house or a duplex out there, you should send a note, a thank you note to the city planners in your local community who rule out any opportunities for new people to come to town. We could do the same thing here in Texas if we just put a moratorium on and said nobody else can move to Texas next year or the next decade. Our prices would go through the roof, too, because our population's increasing by 400,000 people a year.
Now, okay, let me just ask, that really is important. Let's differentiate birth over death and migration. Do you have quite a bit of positive migration?
We've got positive domestic migration in the 4 biggest cities in the state, yep.
Okay.
And, of course, we're a young state. We've got a lot of Hispanic population here, and they're young, and they have large families, so we've got just the opposite of what the United States has as a whole, where you're getting older and less workers and all that. We've got a lot of young people here and a lot of growing population, and every time that the United Auto Workers goes on strike up in the Great Lakes area, that just means another group of businesses either moved to Texas or moved down to Mexico, one of the two.
You're also, and most people really don't know this, but Texas is the number one exporting state in the country.
Yeah, well, you know, if Texas was a country, we would be bigger than Canada. So when people say, well, we're thinking about opening up in a Canadian strategy, I'd just say, hey, why bother with Canada? It's real big. We've got more economy down here in Texas than they do in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ninth largest. If it was a country, it'd be the ninth largest country in the world.
I want to make sure I spend time a little bit on the government working out some solutions in this mortgage mess. We had congressional meetings where they're talking about moratoriums on let's don't raise the interest rates, let's keep the teaser rates. I just wanted your feeling on some of the solutions they're coming up with. Do you think they're positive? Do you think they're going to work? Or do you think ultimately they have repercussions that we're really not considering?
To me, the biggest repercussion is the fact that mortgages, once they're written and sold to somebody else, are personal property, just like owning your home or owning a CD. And when the government comes in and starts to rewrite contracts, that's a taking of personal property. That's no different than Vladimir Putin taking over an oil company from a private owner like they did in the Soviet Union in the past. It's a similar kind of thing. And to the extent that the biggest concern I have, I understand the point of view that we need to do something because if we don't, the banking system could suffer some huge shocks that would be hard to come back from. But the fact is we've got to temper that, because if we establish a precedent here that mortgage terms can be rewritten every time we have a little we stub our toe in the economy,
yes,
then nobody's going to want to buy those mortgages anymore.
Not at these rates, that's for sure.
And so, and you're starting to see that already, because like I mentioned, the spread between the 10-year treasury and the 30-year mortgage is traditionally 1.6%, and right now it's over 2%.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm convinced that a part of that is because people just say, wow, you know, what are you buying? Even if it's not a subprime, you know, if you're going to rewrite the terms of subprime loans, what happens if prime mortgages start to experience some difficulties too? Are we going to rewrite the terms of the prime mortgages too? And so when you have an asset like that, that's, in my opinion, that's called political risk. And when you have political risk, it's just like buying a bond in Mexico or Nigeria or anywhere else. If the government intervenes and rewrites the contracts of personal property, all bets are off.
Sounds like lawsuits would be high on the agenda, too. So that might be very hard to implement just because of the activity of lawyers. Greenspan recently said something that was pretty interesting. I'll quote him. Cash is available, and we should use that in large amounts as is necessary to solve the problems of people facing the prospect of losing their home. I was really surprised by that statement. Is that just literally... let's just write checks to help all the people out in foreclosure?
That doesn't surprise me at all, because that was his modus of operandi all the way through from 1987 until he retired. Whenever there's a problem, whether it's the 1987 stock market crash or the recession of 91 or Y2K or 9/11 or the Russian ruble crisis, it's like whenever something comes along, just print a lot of money and make it go away. So that's been his... method of operation doesn't surprise me at all. The problem with that is when you take that approach, the value of the dollar just gets less and less, and somebody pays a price for stuff like that. And in this particular case, if they do that, it will help out a whole bunch of people that made mistakes by buying houses, but it's going to hurt a whole bunch of people that are on a fixed income and retired as the value of their lifestyle diminishes right in front of their face.
Since we're going to be dealing with a very large group of those people very soon, that would probably be an unwise thing to continue.
I don't know. History shows that people don't feel inflation as much. They notice when people lose jobs a lot quicker than they notice when the value of their lifestyles diminished. But it had to get pretty severe. The last time people got aware of it enough to matter was back in the late 1970s, when people, if you can imagine this, actually put inflation as their number one concern in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to get pretty bad before people would be willing to do anything about it. And even then, we could only work on it for about 2 years. And by the end of 1981, Paul Volcker had pretty much run out of political capital to do what he needed to do. And fortunately, it was enough. And we've been benefiting for about the last 25 years from the repercussions of the courage that guy had to raise interest rates to kill the inflation beast.
Is Bernanke from the same school of thought as his predecessor?
I guess it's too early to tell.
Okay.
Yep. The Wall Street phrase was the Greenspan put, that no matter what happened in the global economy, Alan Greenspan could fix it by rolling out money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you perceive that the central bank can fix every possible risk, then you're willing to take lower returns and take a lot of risk. And so now that Greenspan's retired, the question has been, is will the Greenspan put be replaced by the Bernanke put? And we're going to find out in the next 12 months.
Do you view that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have maybe some tough years ahead?
Frankly, I think Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could be poised to take a much larger share of the market again. Wall Street pretty much ate their lunch in terms of market share in residential home mortgages in the last two or three years.
Okay.
But now that Wall Street is completely out of business for the at least the short term, if not the intermediate term, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and FHA is about the only game in town. So I'm expecting to see FHA ramped up big time.
They're going to raise the loan limits and lower the down and so forth?
Yeah, but I don't think that FHA is kind of a government oversight program.
Yes.
And by definition, those are pretty slow to be able to ramp up to meet high levels of volume. And so I don't see FHA being able to ramp up enough to meet the volume demand, what we need to have happen. So my guess is Fannie and Freddie are going to increase market share because they're the ones that have the technological horsepower and the connections with the marketplace to ramp up their volume and open up the mortgage market again, which a large sector of the Wall Street side is totally closed.
What do you think of the idea of putting a moratorium on due on sale clauses for existing fixed rate loans, allowing that mortgage to move forward? Back in the 80s, when I first started buying in properties, FHA had what they call a simple assumption, where I could send in $45, tell them who the property was deeded to, no qualification, and that was fine.
That is so interesting because I was selling homes back during that era, and when you said that eliminate the due on sale clause, I couldn't even imagine what you're talking about. It's just so far in the past. I don't know if that wasn't too bad of an idea back then, but I don't think that's going to work anymore.
Why is that?
Well, because the people that are buying those bonds are investors that are way detached from the lender that made that initial loan and the paperwork involved. I mean, it's just like, you know, if you buy a TV, you buy a computer and it goes bad, what do you do with it after the warranty's gone? Do you take it and get it fixed and have somebody go through all the problems and paperwork or trying to fix it, or do you just throw it away and go buy another one? And we don't fix TVs, we don't fix radios or VCRs. I don't think we fix mortgages anymore either.
I think it might be a good thing to learn again. Just in the early 80s, one of the reasons we didn't have a price decline in California in 81 and 82 while we had the ridiculous interest rates was about 65% of the transactions were the type that financing moved from the past to the future without having to borrow new money. So
yeah,
that would help California, for instance. You've got a lot of interest rates that are 4 or 5%, you know, in the high fours, literally for a 15-year fixed. If you could move that to a new buyer, you'd end up with less of a price hit and less foreclosures. That's just my thought.
I think that's a possibility, but you also have to keep in mind that while that protected the buyers, look what it did to the banking industry. It totally ruined the savings and loan industry and ran them out of business. So there's always a cost. It just depends on who wants to pay the cost.
We've got 45 seconds. I wanted to ask a quick question about, do you see tax law changes coming down the pike shortly affecting capital gains or the rate of federal tax?
Well, I'm telling people here in Texas and around the country that I'm talking to expect higher taxes, higher income taxes, and higher capital gains rates. I think that's baked into the cake, and all I'm encouraging real estate professionals to do is to negotiate with politicians. It's like, if we're going to have higher taxes, let's get some more deductions again, because back in the 80s, they dropped the tax rates and took away all the deductions, and now if we're going to raise taxes again without deductions, that's going to be pretty rough.
It will be. We've run out of time. Dr. Dotzer, I've really enjoyed our interview. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's been a pleasure to visit with you.
Your website once again, please.
It's www.recenter.tamu.edu. And we've got a lot of information about California metro areas and counties.
You sure do. Thank you very much.
Catch Bruce and the Norris Group team January 31st through February 2nd in San Jose as Bruce teaches his REO boot camp for the first time ever in Northern California. Visit www.thenorrisgroup.com to find out more about this unique opportunity in conjunction with the San Jose Real Estate Investment Club, or call the office at 951-780-5856.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week here on News Talk 590. KTIE.